Hi, and welcome to another episode of Techsplaining. This is Rob Foster, and I'm here with Mark and Stephanie today. So, Mark, how are you?
I'm doing fan-freaking-tastic. How are you doing, Rob?
You look fantastic with your get-up on and I guess you've got a, what are those things? I would call this a toboggan, but my kids call it a beanie.
I call it a hat. I don't know if I have a more technical term for it, but yeah, it is actually part of the Christmas package we're putting together for some of our employees.
It's a secret.
It's going to be published like 2 months from now. It's not like they're going to go.
That's a good one. Yeah, it's kind of, so do you guys send out like a care package to your employees every year? That's really cool.
Well, everybody's remote and it's not easy to have a holiday party with everybody being all over the place. And so that's just our little way of saying thank you to the team.
So my team is, so the people that are based in New York, right? So they work in Rockefeller Center. So their office thing is they are renting out the Rockefeller Center ice skating rink, you know, down that you see by the tree. And so all the employees get to go ice skating there. In Philadelphia, they rented out some country club. In Chicago, they went to some fancy schmancy bar restaurant thing and had a big, big gathering. My team in Nashville is going into the office to have a Christmas cookie decorating class.
Wow.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
You want a hat?
We'll send you a care package.
This is our Festivus episode, so I'm carrying out my cookies. That's my first grievance, is we get to decorate cookies while everybody else gets to do amazingly awesome stuff. I'm debating on wearing my, because they're also doing an ugly sweater contest. I don't know if you guys saw my ugly sweater on Facebook.
But, I did.
I did, yeah.
Those deer were having a good time.
I think if I wear that, I could probably get sent home early, which would be awesome.
Well, if you wear that and bring the 40, I think you're probably on solid.
Yeah, so for those not following, we went to a Christmas party and they had a Dirty Santa, I guess, thing where basically you open a gift and then somebody.
Lost audio, Rob.
Me?
No, we can't, I think. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. So we had a Dirty Santa party, Christmas party at this thing, which basically means that you can, there's a bunch of gifts. You bring a gift and you pick a gift and you can open it and then you can swap with somebody else. So if you see somebody that's opened one earlier, you can grab theirs. So, what I did was I opened up, somebody got an Amazon Echo. So I opened a gift and it was terrible and I traded for an Amazon Echo. Then somebody took that from me. So I had to open up again, and what was in my gift? Well, at this point, I was just done. I was like, I'm just going to keep whatever's in here. It was a bunch of lottery tickets and a 40 ounce of Busch beer. Which, if you're not from the U.S., Busch beer is probably the most awful beer you could possibly think about drinking. So I just immediately cracked it open and started drinking it hot. Which hot Busch beer tastes worse than it sounds, actually.
It's one way to keep someone from stealing it, right?
Yeah.
If they're already drinking the beer, then they're not going to want your gift.
Yeah, people didn't see humor in my shirt either, because I had basically some deer on there, and they were, you know, having a good time, like Mark said. And you know, people were like, oh, I didn't notice that, but that's great. It was kind of subtle, but then once you see it, you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't. I figured it would be much more of a hit than it was. So next year, I'm going to bring out something that's a little more blatantly obvious.
Well, you could do the reindeer boob. Do you remember those from last year?
I don't have boobs big enough to do that anymore. So, Stephanie, how are you?
Not wearing an ugly Christmas sweater or a reindeer. In any format. No, I'm good. It's been excellent. You know, I love this time of year. You know why? Because all of my regular meetings, my recurring meetings, they start to become canceled this week. So I get a little extra downtime.
Have you guys had any snow up there? I know you're a little further north than Mark and I.
It snows every time I leave. So I actually haven't seen it myself because I keep traveling and it snows while I'm gone and then it melts before I get back, which is like typical Ohio. So
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, we had a, while I was out of town last week, we had a winter storm warning for 2 feet of snow, which is like insane for the, for us. We get, you know, maybe 6 to 8 inches is a big snow. They were saying 2 feet of snow. You know, people ran to Walmart. We ran out of bread and milk and then like nothing happened. We didn't get any snow whatsoever. And that's just the way it always goes here.
It did come through though, right? It went south of us. At least I know it didn't come through Ohio, but like I think there were parts of Virginia and some of the south that got dumped on.
Oh, yeah, right, North Carolina and Virginia. And I think that whole area, a friend of mine is in, I think it's Richmond, and they got 12 inches of snow, which is like the record for Richmond. It was a crazy amount of snow, which I can imagine just shut that whole city down. Because you may not know this, Stephanie, but we are not in any way prepared for snow like you guys are.
Oh, I can imagine. You guys like Atlanta, like it's, you know, just a little bit of a, you know, snow or ice and the whole place shuts down.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm out and about in the Jeep, but there's the people go freaking nuts. I mean, you can't go get to the grocery stores and people are buying milk and bread and eggs and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, but I know when it hit Atlanta a couple of years ago, I think I read or I saw a news report where Atlanta as a city, which is a fairly major city in the South, they had two snowplows.
Wow.
Which I don't even, honestly, I don't even know that we have them. I think we do have a few. I've seen a few, but not on a large scale. I mean, they're not something that's, you know, rampant that they use every year or a lot.
Yeah, we have a couple here, and they'll close school on, you know, the threat of snow. They don't have to see a flight falling. They'll cancel school here.
Yeah, typically if it's snowing in your area, Mark, we close school. So if it's snowing in your area, definitely in Memphis, like Nashville, will close. It's awesome.
Crazy stuff.
Now, hey, you guys just had an earthquake too, didn't you?
Apparently, yeah. My parents were telling me it was near where my parents live, and they were telling me about it. And it was only like a 4.4 magnitude earthquake, and it was like in the middle of the night. So I guess it just woke everybody up, but no major damage. But yeah, it sounds like there was an earthquake. So crazy stuff is happening around here: earthquakes and snowstorms and. It's about time for me to head to the woods. I tell you.
That's why I live here. You know, when any sort of apocalypse happens, everybody's going to be coming to my house. So.
You know, I heard something on the radio the other day, and they were talking about the best place to if the zombie apocalypse were to happen, the best place to go would be like the Rocky Mountains or in some mountainous region that was hard to get to. So I was like, wow, I'm pretty much set up because I've got my spot. East Tennessee, baby.
That's not the Rockies.
It's cool. I'm not going to drive, you know, 4 days to get to the Rockies during a zombie apocalypse. I'll go to my place and hide in a cave. Okay. set about 50 yards back with a rifle and we'll be set.
Nice.
Yeah. So what's going on in the world of Office 365 right now? We had some outages a couple weeks ago with MFA going down. Were you guys affected?
Yeah, we were actually. So funny story. We were in the middle of starting to demo for a brand new customer. So we're out there trying to sell how awesome Office 365 is. And we start into the demo and I always kind of talk about MFA because it's going to prompt me when I'm in a new location. I'm going to get that prompt about every time. And I was going to talk to them about it, show them the app on the phone as we started getting into the demo. And we're going, this isn't working. What's going on? And I think that was the first round of multi-factor not working.
No, that was the second round because we had just said. Yeah, because we just said, oh, there was an outage last week, and you know, it rarely happens, but it did happen, and then it just happens right there again in front of the client. So
that's good. That's not good for confidence building, huh?
No. It's hard to demo, too, when you can't get into your accounts, but I think Mark got in, was able to get in and shut my multi-factor off temporarily so that I could get in and do the demos, and I guess it's a good thing I left it off for the second time it went down. So I had to get back in, re-enable it after all that chaos. But
how were you able to get in, Mark?
I happened to already be logged in. So, right. Yeah, I was authenticated when it went down. So
you logged in and then you just went to Azure Active Directory and turned it off for her. And that's cool. That's essentially what we did as well. It affected, I don't know, maybe 300,000 of our people. So it was across all the applications. So it was, it's kind of an interesting thing because it seems to be perceived as whatever application people are trying to get to, is broken, right? So it's not that, hey, MFA's down. It's, hey, SharePoint's down, or hey, Teams is down, or hey, my custom app that I'm trying to get to is down, all that stuff. And so it was just a fairly broad, I guess, perception management exercise that we had to go through to say, hey, you know, this is the authentication stuff. It's on Microsoft side. It's affecting all apps. It was a fun couple of hours.
Well, and I guess the way it got reported in too, Microsoft was initially reporting that it was an outage in Europe, or, you know, and it was just perception because they were up before the rest of us were. So no one in the US had been logging in and reporting the issue yet. And as it turns out, I think it was a worldwide issue, right? I mean, it was a really big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is one of those things that I thought redundancy and all of that stuff would kick in, and all of the stuff that we sell as benefits of Azure, but it was just a catastrophic failure for some reason. I don't know what happened.
Well, I seem to remember, I think if I remember correctly, I read that this was another one of those scenarios where the failovers were not robust enough to handle it. So one area failed, and then it went to the fallback, and then there was just too many people on the fallback. So I don't know, it that might've been related to something else, but I think that's what I saw. So it sounds like they did have the redundancy in place, but the redundancy couldn't handle the extra load, which it seems like happened for something else recently too. Right. So I don't know, maybe they need some extra work on the backups.
Well, you know, and one of the things that we try to sell is the stability and the fact that, you know, the issues like this are rare, and to be honest, they are rare, but people still really freak out when this happens because it's not supposed to happen. But I have a point here. What is my point? Oh, my point is, like, even if you don't go Office 365 and you've got your own environment, you're going to have these same sorts of issues. These things pop up from time to time. I think the big thing that people feel is the loss of control because they have no control over being able to go in there and fix it themselves. That doesn't mean you're going to fix it faster if it fails for you. I think the biggest thing you can't do is fire the person that's responsible.
That's right. Well, from a leadership perspective, you can't go scream at your guy, right? You can't scream at your person that you have responsible for that, because it's in another data center at another company, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if, you know, we can say that this is horrible and it shouldn't happen, but it happens on-prem and in the cloud, and you don't necessarily have less control either. It's just that feeling of less control in the situation. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I mean, I guess technically they were only down 20 hours over the, you know, last 2 weeks or whatever, which is a lot.
A long time.
Which is a lot. I mean, the second outage you were talking to, Stephanie, I think we were down for 11 hours, eight maybe. Yeah. I think one was 8, one was 11, but hours. But I mean, that's a significant amount of time over the course of a year when you start looking at like 2, 3, 4, 5 nines, right? I mean, you know, uptime and all of that. And I don't know what their SLA is. I'm assuming it's at least 2 nines. But you're approaching that that 2 nines area there with 20 hours of downtime in the course of a year, right? So that's great point, Mark. I mean, it happens. It just seems to have happened twice in a row. And you know, I know they're, because it happened, I know they're going to make the service better, right? I mean, it's not like Microsoft to sit around and go, oh yeah, that happened. Well, we're back on. Let's business as usual. I know somebody's in the background working right now diligently to make sure that whatever happened, if it happens again, we're going to be covered.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, do you think that this should be a reason not to put a business critical application into Office 365 or Azure, or what do you think? Cause that's conversation is going to have to be had. You know, Is it worth it?
That's a good question. And I think it probably depends. It depends on if you stop making money on that application being down, right? So I think about, and this is not an Azure thing, right? This was specifically an MFA thing, right? That you could turn off if it happened, right? And you and that's what everybody seemed to have done. They disabled MFA until it came back up, then you re-enabled it. So I would say yes, in this instance, it's probably because you can turn it off. I would say yes, it's still probably safe to... No, I would say yes, it's definitely safe to put a mission critical application behind MFA. I think it because you have the ability to turn it off if something like this goes wrong. I don't know how many manufacturing floor applications are secured with MFA or anything like that. I doubt it's many. I don't even think many of them would even authenticate to the cloud. I think they want to have a, you know, if everything went out, we can still make product, right? So and that's really kind of where you'll start losing money by the minute being down, right? I mean, for us being consultants and auditors and accountants or whatever, I mean, because we can't log into our intranet, that doesn't matter. We're still able to work with clients and process data and do things locally. So for us, I mean, it's not as big of a deal. Even in this instance, it's not that big of a deal.
Well, and I just think in general, though, maybe not this instance, but you know, maybe I'm opening a little bit of a can of worms, but there are a lot of points of failure in the Office 365 world, right? There's a lot of pieces that could potentially fail. Maybe it's Flow, maybe it's Power Apps, maybe it's SharePoint, maybe it's MFA. You know, it's things that you don't necessarily have control over or a way to do anything about it. So how would an organization realistically look at this and decide which pieces of Office 365 to use for something that you do lose money if you don't have it running up and running? Mm-hmm. That's it. And I don't know the answer to that question. I think it's
when the question is that even a higher risk than anywhere else you put it? The downtime that was experienced on MFA is still, you know, 20 hours. How many times do you run into that if you're supporting the systems or if those are on-prem and you know, at some point you have to say how much time, effort, and money is it worth for us to have that system ourselves versus to go have it hosted somewhere else? We may have less control, but over time, you know, you may lose money over that 20 hours, but how much money did it cost you to build and maintain it yourself or to have it somewhere else?
Oh, I couldn't imagine what it would cost to host your own MFA or, you know, like whether you use Sun Identity or, you know, whatever product it is. I can't imagine what that would cost an organization because you got to have people to support it. You got to have hardware to support that. You got to have redundancy on that hardware. Just all of the pieces that you would have to do. And a lot of companies do it, right? I know like Rackspace, I was talking to some folks there. They don't use Microsoft MFA. They use RSA or something like that, which is, you know, a different program or a different product. But I don't, it is far more cost effective to have that managed by Microsoft, even if the risk is you go down for 10 hours a year or whatever, you know, 20 hours a year. I mean, it's far more cost effective to
well, do and then,
because it integrates with everything, right? So everything you host in Azure or Office 365, you can enable MFA on those applications by clicking a checkbox on the app, right? And that's that is the beauty of the whole thing, is the interconnectedness of it.
Agreed. And if you want to go ahead and invest all the money into keeping it all on-prem, it doesn't stop the guy with the backhoe from cutting your fiber optic cable and shutting everything down anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And you can do it. A lot of companies do, and that's totally fine. It's it's just going to cost a lot, right? And I don't know if it's anything that even our listeners would have control over, you know, making that kind of decision, but that's a huge strategic decision to make. And it's something that you have to commit to for many, many years to really justify the cost payback.
Well, yeah. And also all this to say is that, yeah, it was a pain. The MFA was broken for 20 hours this year, but in the grand scheme of things, it's still better than the alternatives and probably a smarter choice than the alternatives for most organizations. See how I turned it around?
I like it. I like it.
And so let's just use this as a reminder. If you haven't turned your MFA back on, go turn it on.
Yes, go turn it on. Yes, what she said.
Yeah. Easy to forget.
Since you're the sunshine of this show, tell us grievance. What's your grievance?
Oh, do I have a grievance? I always have a grievance. I don't know.
It can't be anything.
Do you want to open that panel?
Yeah, I'm going to say.
other than Mark.
That's a regret more than a grievance, by the way.
Gosh, I don't actually have anything at the top of mind this week. Fine. We could talk about flow a little bit. It's probably more, more of a developer problem though, than an overall problem. So I don't know if you've heard this yet, Rob, but, there's been some changes, discussed and I guess posted in the tech community in a blog about how, there's this HTTP connector that's available in Flow, and it has been enabling us to be a little more flexible with flows. There's, it's kind of difficult sometimes, you know, anytime you build a really large workflow, it's difficult to maintain and it gets clunky over time. So we've been using this as a way to kind of split our flows out and be able to have one flow call another flow. There's a bunch of uses for it as a connector. And now it sounds like Microsoft's going to make that an upgrade. So you have to have like a P1 flow plan to be able to use it, or P1 or P2, Mark, do you remember?
It was P1 or P2.
P1 or P2. And so it's previously been included as part of your Office 365 Flow subscription. Oh. So this is actually one of those rare scenarios. We don't get this a whole lot where we've been handed something and then all of a sudden been told to pay for it after the fact. So that's going to make some, we have been using it with our customers. We've got a handful of customers we have to reach out to and kind of explain to them the scenario and that we may have to potentially rework some of their flows. Now, as with anything, we've got a year to figure this out. So
what is the alternative, right? Pay is one, right? And yeah. But what is the, if a customer comes back and says, no, that's not acceptable, I'm not going to pay, what do you do?
Well, in some it kind of depends, right? Like in some cases, it's a matter of combining flows so that it's all in one instead of one flow launching another. I don't know, Mark, what were you going to say?
You know, you can look to see if there's a premium connector that does what you're looking for. And maybe there is something that you can buy as a premium connector that would cost less than upgrading your plan. And I think you can also look at doing some things in Logic Apps instead of doing them in Flow. So it's a little more complicated. You need a little more technical ability. There are some options. I think that it's just going to have to come on a case-by-case basis.
So well, that stinks. That really, I mean, I get it. I understand, you know, it's probably should be a premium connector, but still, I mean, that really kind of stinks that, especially that they've given it and then now they're pulling back and saying, hey, this actually costs money now.
Yeah. And that's the biggest challenge for us is just having to go back. And because a lot of times, you know, when you ask, we're in the mid market, right? So we have customers that aren't purchasing third-party tools, third-party connectors, paying for upgrades. And so that's a difficult conversation for us because they may have said, if we would have asked up front, they would have said, no, we're not doing that. You know, create a different way to approach this because we don't want to pay for the upgrade. And the other piece of that I think is going to be a little painful is that in many cases in Flow, we've got this opportunity, like the governance, right? If you want to come in and create policies around your flows and Power Apps, you can pay for the P2 version and your administrator is the only one who needs that upgraded license. And what we're hearing right now is that it's actually going to be anyone who's running that flow and not just the one creating it. So, you know, that too, it's not just one license you're buying, but it's everyone who's running the flow as well. That adds up.
How much is the license?
Oh gosh, you're putting me on the spot here.
No, I mean, I assume it's more than 50 cents a user. I mean, per month. No,
talking, I don't know, like $7 for the P1. We can look it up here real quick.
Flow Plan 1 is $5 a user a month. And it looks like Flow Plan 2 is $15 a user a month.
Yeah. Ooh. So 5 and 15. So you do that. And sometimes you're not even going to know who might come in and run that flow. So how do you know who needs the upgrade? That's the other piece of that. Do we now have to license everyone to cover those scenarios? So it becomes kind of a complicated situation and understanding how to handle that. So we're hoping, you know, as with anything with Microsoft, they've said, okay, we know you need to be able to deal with this. So if you are already using this connector, you now have a year to figure out your plan. But if you start new and haven't used it yet, they're saying you're not going to be able to have it unless you have the upgraded plan. Mm. So then the question becomes, what is Microsoft going to do in the next year that may be able to help us with this scenario? And we really don't have answers to that quite yet.
So that brings up a good question. And I know you guys do a ton with flow. How do you manage flow adequately in an organization, right? So you publish these flows, people start executing them. How do you know who's executing them? How do you know where they're published to and all that stuff? I mean, is that something that's not really known, or is that something that's just fairly easy to report on?
I wouldn't use the word easy, I guess. So again, kind of going to those upgraded plans with the higher level of administration, you do have the ability to go in and view and create environments, which then allows you to apply policies. So you can kind of, you know, put people in an environment to, let's say, prevent them from being able to publish a flow that uses Twitter or Facebook or social media. So,
but that's not included with the Office 365 version of Flow.
No, you have to have the upgraded plans in order to be able to go create those policies. So there are administrator features, but you do have to pay. And in those cases, you're only paying for the administrator, which I fully support, right? If, you know, you need to go in and administer something, at least they're not charging every person for that. But you do have to know that you have to pay in order to get those features. Not everybody knows that.
No. Wow.
Yeah. So I kind of see a consequence of this also being that SharePoint designer workflows are not going anywhere anytime soon, because if you can do the same thing in SharePoint designer, you don't have to pay extra for it. People are going to start using SharePoint designer again. And just when we started getting them off of it, it's a big deal.
Mm. Mm.
I still believe that Microsoft will somehow meet us in the middle here. I don't know what that will be by any stretch, but they have their reasons for making this shift. And I think too that this is probably only hitting the developers. If you ask across our team, the different people who create flows, the developers used it and my IT pros did not. So it may not even be hitting that large of a group of people yet, because it is a developer tool in the way that it was implemented. So hopefully we don't have a huge impact and they'll give us something different going forward.
Wow.
So that's been an interesting conversation across our team. And, you know, of course, we've been in contact with Microsoft to try and figure out what the game plan is going to be. But definitely for those that, you know, weren't in the loop on that, you know, maybe I'll do show notes one of these days and I can post the link out to the blog article that talks about this connector and how the licensing's changing. But yeah, so that's not going to be an easy conversation.
Mm. Yeah, that's that. Good luck with that. And I hope to hear a follow-up on it. Would be interesting, and I don't want, obviously, you to mention client names, but I would be interested to maybe if you could give some generic examples for how clients not only reacted, but how they responded and were able to implement this and kind of move forward with this. Because I'm assuming some of them will not want to pay. Some of them will just go ahead and pay the $5 or whatever. But it'd be interesting to see kind of what the percentage of that is and really understand, you know, if they decided not to pay, how they actually resolved that and kind of move forward with that.
Yeah, we'll do a follow-up on that. We'll let you know once we've kind of looped everyone in. We were kind of waiting for things to settle in before we contacted people. So if you're a customer and you're listening and we haven't talked about it yet, we are planning on it. Don't worry, we've got a year. But we did want to make sure we had all of our ducks in a row because we didn't want anyone to panic. It's not a panic scenario. We've got a lot of time to figure this out.
Yeah. And I, like Stephanie said, I fully expect Microsoft to come up with some alternatives for us that aren't quite as powerful as these HTTP requests.
I've got a grievance I'm dealing with right now, actually. Have you guys done much with conditional access policies?
A little bit.
Have you now? Here's what's happening. So conditional access policies are where you can basically prevent downloads and printing and things like that from SharePoint sites or, you know, OneDrive sites or wherever, from non-managed devices. So like my device, my laptop that's on the corporate domain, company domain that's loaded up in Azure AD, works fine. I can go to any site. I can do what I normally do. If I log in from my home laptop and to try to do the same things because I can get to OneDrive and all of that. What we want to do, the idea is that we want to prevent me, we want me to be able to get to the content, but not be able to download or print or, you know, do anything to where I could actually cause a data exfiltration issue, right? To where I can steal content or steal stuff onto my home laptop. Works amazingly well. It works really well. Too well, actually, because what happens is that if you've got a SharePoint publishing site, it treats downloading of images, so images coming in from, you know, from the page, as well as JavaScript, as you trying to download files. So when you have a page that's loading, right, you get a bunch of broken image links and you get non-working JavaScripts because it stops those downloads from happening.
Interesting.
Just some things that are happening right now. So which I think is okay. I mean, technically that's what it's supposed to do. But I guess I've got a support ticket open right now to see if we can actually exclude these sites. Because ideally we want that to happen on document sites where people are working with documents and content and things like that. Yeah. We don't want that to happen on publishing sites where people are downloading web content, they're looking at web pages. I just want to get to my holiday vacation schedule or whatever, you know. And there doesn't appear to be a way to actually exclude those sites unless you put the policy manually on all of the sites, the team sites, right? The team sites, the teams, group sites, all of that stuff, and then selectively exclude the 10 or so publishing sites that you have. So that seems to be the only workaround. Again, I'm hoping Microsoft comes back and recommends something better, but that seems to be about the only workaround that we've been able to find is a fairly large loop that runs, say, daily or hourly or whatever, that goes out and checks every site that we have provisioned and then sets the conditional access policy on that site itself.
So this is, when you say publishing sites, you're talking classic sites or?
Yeah. Classic publishing sites. Yeah.
So do you know what happens with the modern sites and if they're treated differently?
Are treated differently.
They are. Okay.
They are treated differently. Yeah.
So this is a classic legacy SharePoint issue.
Yep. It is. It is.
Okay.
Which we have a ton of those sites in our, as a lot of folks do.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm hoping it works out. We desperately need that. I mean, conditional access policies are going to be great for our organization. But we also have to have web pages.
Interesting. So that'll be another follow-up item, Rob. I guess we'll see how that ends. So it sounds like maybe someone rolled out some policies and didn't test them on legacy sites. Maybe.
Well, so we tested them on legacy sites. It seems to only work in a certain configuration scenario that we have, right? And I'm hoping it's just a dial we can turn or a button we can push inside of there that enables this and lets this traffic go through. But all of our tests that we did where we turned it on at the site level, we put a policy on specific users that were in a group, and then pushed it out to them. It seemed to work well. It was when we actually pushed it broadly across the organization was when it started shutting things down. And it was only if you weren't on your company issued device. So if you were at home or you're at some kiosk somewhere trying to pull up, you know, the corporate news or whatever, you got blocked and it was a big old nasty mess. So it was only in a certain scenarios where it would happen, but it did happen.
Mark, that would shut down everything you create.
Shush.
It's no JavaScript.
Shush.
No jQuery.
Well, no, I could just do it all. If you reference it all by CDN, then it's got to come across a different path anyway. And so that wouldn't be blocked. So
that's interesting you say that. So we've been looking at it. There's actually something you can do to where you can turn on a tenant level CDN origin for things, right? And so we're looking at potentially doing that, where when you upload an image or a JavaScript, it automatically gets pushed into a CDN, and then the links come from there. I think that might actually resolve our issue, to be honest, is that we can potentially turn that on for those specific sites and then allow the origin. I think it's the origin. You have to set it to some library in specific sites. And we've got maybe 30 of these sites. Mm-hmm. We could set the origins for the pages to say, hey, for these page libraries and these document libraries and these JavaScript libraries, put all this stuff in the CDN, and then when it renders, it should have those links down. So I think that is a possible workaround. Now, I didn't mention it because we haven't tested it, but I think that's definitely a possible workaround that we could use.
I mean, logically, it makes sense.
It does,
but it's SharePoint, so
yeah, yeah. So cool. That's good stuff. I mean, I'll definitely follow up with you guys on that, because I think it's important. I don't know how many of your customers are using conditional access policies.
Not to that level. I think probably most of them, if they've done anything, they've just shut down access to the site from outside their firewall. So you have to be on, you know, the local network or on a VPN, for et cetera, something real basic like that. We've probably seen that more so than, we're just now starting to get into some conversations. I think we had one the other day with a large real estate firm who was also wanting to be able to prevent download of documents and things like that. So a handful, but not a lot.
How do the mobile apps work if they shut off access to stuff unless you're on the corporate network? Do they just fail?
Yeah, I mean, you would have to join your mobile to the local network. And if they allow that, then you could pull it up. But otherwise, and in the case of the most recent one, they were still very much working from a classic desktop mode. They weren't interested in mobile whatsoever. So that wasn't a concern for them yet. Finance group, of course. And so they're a little slower on the uptake with the newer tech and the modern and the mobile. They weren't quite there yet. So yeah. They had more security concerns being finance related, that they are very much easing into that whole thing.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Some industry is much slower on the uptake than others, and finance, anybody accounting related, finance, people dealing with super secure information. Oh my gosh, they take so much longer to get up to speed and to really trust the tools that are in place in 365.
I had a meeting with some of our corporate lawyers, and they want to do something with Teams, and it was a meeting that somebody else like said, hey Rob, I need you to meet with these people, but tell you what, I'm going to be in the room with them. They don't want you to know their names. They're just going to ask you questions over some random topics. I was just like, all right, super weird. I was like, but aren't we like all, you know, corporate citizens? And oh yeah, but they're lawyers. I was like,
dark ops.
Yeah, man, it was crazy.
Wow,
it was crazy. But they were like, well, the basically their whole thing was like, we have you been to like TeslaMotorCorp.com? We want that site for our 10 people to use.
Like, did they distort their voices so you couldn't understand? You know, couldn't pick them out.
No, I mean they were talking in normal voices, but it was they wanted a $4 million web page for 10 people, and now they were like, oh, we need tagging and we need this and that. I was like, who's going to tag this stuff, this content and all this? You've got 10 people that are going to be using this. I was like, who's going to manage all this? They're like, we'll talk to you next week. Click. So clearly haven't thought through any of this, you know.
Do you remember the top SharePoint site? Was it topsharepoint.com or something? I always had like the Ferrari site, yeah. Ferrari SharePoint site. Oh man, so many requests for that. I'm like, do you know what you're asking for?
Yeah, that's probably an $8 million site, you know, $10 million site they've spent on building that.
Well, and you can't do that. Like, for internal use is not the same as an external website that has very basic, like, high-resolution images and a little bit of text, and it's very simplistic in comparison to what an intranet is or a content management system. It's just not even in the same ballpark.
Well, that's, I run into that all the time, that same discussion all the time with search, right? Enterprise search in an organization is not Google. Google does something randomly different, but always people, I want my search to look, to work like Google. It's like, do you really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Users love them. Grievances, users. Grievances.
You make something idiot proof, they make better idiots. That's what I say.
They do.
Do you have a grievance, Mark? You got any grievances for us?
No, I don't actually. You guys covered my grievances. I think that all of our clients are wonderful and that Microsoft is awesome and that I'm just happy to be here. And
it's getting deep in here, Mark.
Am I, can you see, is everything on my nose?
See, now it just sounds like you're being sarcastic.
People aren't used to hearing me say nice things. No, I don't have any grievances other than those that you guys talked about already with Flow and MFA, because those have been what have impacted me most lately. I've been playing around with stuff in Teams and the graph and building Teams applications, and all that stuff is going really smoothly, and I like the progress we're making there, and yeah.
So. Have you dusted your desk lately?
No, absolutely not.
There is a bottle of Pledge right behind you. You should get on that. I hope that's Pledge and not air freshener, because I can imagine it being both.
It's Pledge. Well, you know, I could use it for both, and it's antibacterial.
So. Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah.
No, I just don't clean up my office ever. So Chris, this is probably going to be our last episode before Christmas, I would have to guess. So as you guys listen to this in February, we can talk about how, do you guys have any big Christmas plans? What are you guys doing for Christmas?
Everybody comes to my house. So just a couple days and then everyone goes away and it's usually downtime. This year, John and I will be going to Key West. So 5 days of sunshine and beaches.
Just
so
the two of you?
Fantastic. Well, we're going with my husband's best friend and his wife, whom I get along with very well. So it'll be some good downtime without the kiddos and, just relax for once. Hopefully not have to work. So I say hopefully. You never know. I don't know. What about you guys?
Yeah, I'd say we actually do mostly downtime. So I'm going to be off hopefully if we can get this conditional access stuff worked out. until I think January 7th, I believe. So I'm taking some time, a few weeks and
that's
stuff.
That's like a sabbatical, Rob. Yeah.
It is. It's like a sabbatical.
I hate you just a little bit right now. So.
How do you go back to work though after like 4 weeks, 3 weeks?
It feels so refreshing, you know, when you do. But yeah, I think we're just going to hang out, not really do anything. Nobody comes to our house. We usually do a big blowout for Thanksgiving. And we always make sure Christmas, my sister stays at her house with, you know, her family and stuff like that. And, you know, we stay here. My parents will come up. But getting some interesting presents for the boys, which is kind of cool. The oldest is getting he just made Mid-State Band, so he's actually ranked the I think top 23rd trumpet player in Middle Tennessee right now in his high school in the high school arena, which is
awesome.
Freaking awesome. You know, I'm really proud of him. So I'm getting him they have a mute that goes in the end of the trumpet. He plays trumpet and it's got a headphone jack on it that goes into like your ears and it reduces the noise by like 90% of the sound coming out of the horn. But in his headphones, it sounds like he's playing in a concert hall, which is kind of cool. So he gets that real experience of hearing himself like in a concert hall and we don't have to hear it. And my youngest is getting a full drum set, like a legit for real drum set, which is interesting.
It doesn't have a mute though, does it?
Well, when I was thinking about this, I was like, this is kind of something you get like your sister's kids as a joke, right? Or whatever. Right. But no, so come to find out, they make low volume heads and cymbals that reduces the noise by over 80%. So it's like real metal cymbals and real drum heads. So he gets the feel and somewhat of the sound of drums, but just in a very low volume setting. But it's louder enough to where you could play like at a coffee shop, right, with an acoustic guitar, but you couldn't play you know, Bridgestone Arena or whatever. But it's so he's getting a full drum set. His goal is to, he wants to be the jazz band drummer for his middle school jazz band. So I'm slowly but surely building a band here, guys. That's just kind of my goal. Family band, and we go on tour, and you know, I quit my job and we just get a bus and go.
Be like the Jackson 5 kind of.
Yeah, or the Partridge Family or something. I don't know.
So you're the fun family. I make my kids learn to write code so I can hire them, and you like force your kids to learn music so you have a band. So.
Yeah. So that's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. My kids, I'm real fortunate. They love music, as do I. And so it's just a fun time. So we'll probably be playing a lot of music this Christmas. Yeah.
Wait, does your wife play anything? Is she able to?
No, she does not play any. She doesn't even play the radio well.
Did you get her some spa days to get out of the house while this music is being made, or just
like, you know, that's probably a good idea. Actually, that's probably a really good idea.
Just until, you know, they get a little more practice under their belt, and then. I'm sure it all sounds amazing.
Oh, it's the trumpet playing is actually getting really good. The drumming, it's needs some work. It needs some work.
She'll be on next year's airing of grievances.
Yes, well, just one show. Like, how did you guys let him do this? He talked about this. You should have called me. Mark, what about you?
Christmas is fairly low key here. But it's just be some family and friends over for Christmas Day, and we'll do a little Christmas dinner. But every Christmas morning we have this thing called a jam and cheese braid, which is like, it's awesome. It's like a homemade Danish type thing with cream cheese and jam and yeast bread. And that's actually my favorite part of Christmas, is that morning to cook that and eat that and watch the kids open presents. So looking forward to a little bit of downtime. I only get like the day or so off. Someone has to keep the lights on while Stephanie's out at Key West on the beach.
This is the guy who got back from a 10-day trip to Europe.
Yeah, we didn't mention that. I mean, you were like boondoggling in Europe doing your thing. I mean, you know, how was that?
I was networking. It wasn't all fun and games. It was a 10-day trip, and I started off in Vienna, Austria. And there was, because there's a SharePoint Saturday Vienna there where I had a session, and I also did a keynote with Mike Fitz where we argued about citizen development. And I've never been to Austria before, or let alone Vienna. And it was right at the start of their Christmas season. So there were Christmas lights everywhere. There were Christmas markets everywhere. People selling hot wine on the carts. And it was really cool. And it snowed the first day I was there. So that was a fantastic experience. I was there for a couple of days, and then I drove down to Slovenia, which I didn't even know was a country until like a year ago. But I went to a city called Ljubljana, Slovenia, for a 3-day conference. This one's called the Thrive Conference, which it happens once a year. Fantastic conference on the smaller side. So you have 20 people in your room, and they're very excited to have you there. And Slovenia is gorgeous. It's in the mountains and kind of near the Alps. You can see the Alps in the distance. And same type of thing. There's a lot of outdoor Christmas lights and music and selling more hot wine from the carts. I had my first roasted chestnuts, which, it's all right. And then after that, I had the choice of flying home from Slovenia and having a 17-hour layover at Charles de Gaulle. And Charles de Gaulle is like the first or second worst airport on the face of the earth. Or I could take a 2-hour drive to Venice, Italy, and fly out of Venice, Italy. So I chose to drive down to Venice. And I spent a couple of days in Venice exploring the city and walking thousands and thousands of steps, you know, eating food and just having a good time.
Did you have more hot wine in Venice?
I did, but it was like so much more expensive in Venice. It was a crazy, was it? It's like, yeah. So in both Slovenia and Vienna, it was like €2 to €3 for a glass of hot wine. And then in Venice, I was at St. Mark's Square at a restaurant there, and it was €12 for a glass of hot wine. Yeah, so it's insanely expensive.
It's those shady Italians, man.
Okay, so this is my grievance. You wanted a grievance, here's my grievance.
We knew we'd get there eventually. We let him talk long enough, there'd be something.
Oh my gosh, I'm still livid about this when I think about it. So I buy a ticket to get a bus from Venice Island back to the airport. Go to the ticket office, it's €8 for the ticket. I buy the ticket, the bus shows up, I get on the bus, and we're off to the airport. Two stops before we get to the airport, these officials get on to check your tickets, whatever they call them. And they go through checking tickets and they grab my ticket and they check it and they go, you didn't scan your ticket when you came on the bus. That's a 60 euro fine. And I'm like, no, I've got the receipt right here. I've got it right here. I just purchased. It's like, nope, sorry, that's the rules. You didn't scan it. See, it looks says you need to scan it. And it was in Italian. It wasn't even in English. And so apparently if you don't scan
your ticket. You're in Italy.
Everything else, there's English everywhere else. And he's like getting kind of an attitude with me. And I said, no, I'm not paying it. Call the police. I'm not paying this fine. I'm like, forget it. Call the police. And at that point, he calmed down. And he's like, well, sure. So you don't have to pay the fine now. We'll just print you out a ticket. And then you can mail it in if you want to pay it. And I'm like, well, what happens if you don't pay it? And he wasn't able to tell me that. And then so he went through and gave me a ticket. And he's like, do you want to sign? And I said, no, I'm not signing that. And he said,
Mark's never getting back into the country.
Yeah, you're never
going to be thrown into jail for a ticket. It's like a parking ticket, but it'll be worth like $1 million by the time he gets back.
But it's like, it's clearly a ripoff designed to catch the tourists who don't know this rule, right? Because I had the receipt in my hand from just purchasing the ticket. And it's just like such a ripoff.
Mm.
I'm, like I said, still angry thinking about that they did that.
Yeah, shady Italians, man.
I tell you what.
I told you to be careful there. Did you get any good espresso? Because they do good espresso in Italy.
It wasn't any better than Venice or Vienna or Slovenia. I mean, they have decent espresso there too. The only thing I did like is that my hotel did have a Nespresso, which is also, that's kind of nice to see that. You get that in Europe a lot more than you do in the States at some of the nicer hotels. So. Mm.
That's expensive. That's high dollar coffee right there. It's like 50 cents a pod.
I tell you what, you talk about some expensive coffee.
Fancy coffee.
Fancy coffee.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we've aired out our grievances. I feel much better now. So thank you guys for allowing me to to have my Festivus. And But I guess if anybody has any questions or thoughts, please email us at info@textplaining.net. And we will probably come at you with a new show at the beginning of the year.
Sounds great. Ciao.
Happy holidays.